Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us for the Around the League podcast from UGASports.com. I am Dane Young, an analyst, and we do Film Don't Lie, a lot of other stuff, podcast host for UGASports.com. That's Brent Rollins from Pro Football Focus and my co-author in Film Don't Lie on UGASports.com, and the College Football Hall of Famer, Jim Donnan. Guys, we have a little bit of a lighter week this week with four SEC games, but a lot to get to nonetheless. And let's just start with predictions. Brent Rollins, man, you are on fire, taking over the lead in our picks. I had a two-game lead, but I went 0-3. Here are the standings now. Doc, you're 9-3. I am 8-4. And the old ball coach, 7-5.
Yep, that's the way it goes. Got to let you guys get a lead.
Brent,
what did we miss last week? I know we got. I got South Carolina. I missed Tennessee. What else did I miss?
That was it. You were 1-2. So you got South Carolina right. You missed Tennessee, and then we did Georgia and Alabama.
Yeah. I thought we were going to count that one.
Well,
you went with the emotional pick, me and you, but we could have picked what we thought would happen. But hey, that's the way it goes. I got a long way to come back. What's he, 8-3? And you're, what is he now?
So Brent's 9-3. I am 8-4. And coach, you're 7-5.
All right.
We got three more picks coming today. So redemption is a week away always, right?
Always.
Where it goes.
Brent, I did want to go to you before we get to our bold predictions, because you were texting me earlier and you were saying you've been looking at some data from that Georgia and Alabama game, which we've talked about ad nauseum, but I'd love to kind of get your input because I haven't heard from you directly since the game.
Yeah, there's two big things to really think about with this game. One is that offense is king now. It just is. That's two straight games that Georgia's played the number one off, or the two last two games they played the number one offense. They've given up over 1,000 yards and 88 points. So offense is king. But the other part about this game specifically is the scoring opportunities and how you have to take advantage of them. And when I look at scoring opportunities, you think about, all right, ball, either one big play like the Waddle play or the Cook play, but also when you're in the opponent's territory. That was 9 of 12 drives for Alabama. They scored on 7 of them, some form of points, touchdown, field goal. Georgia had 8 drives where they were in Alabama's territory, only scored on 4. So if you get into their territory, you have to score against that type of offense. The other thing from the game was, you know, we talked a lot about how well Mac Jones is playing. But one of the things that they do as much as anything is they protect him very well with how they call their plays. And I went back and looked, and it was something I noticed on a rewatch, but I went and looked specifically at the data that we have. On 18 of his 38 dropbacks, right at 47%, Alabama had 6 or more blockers, i.e. an extra tight end, a back, not just the 5 offensive linemen. So unlike last year where LSU went empty, you know, no 5 linemen all blocking all the time, Bama protects so well knowing that Jones is not necessarily the running threat. Stetson, on the other hand, 9 of 47 dropbacks where he had 6 or more blockers in protection. So most guys out in the route, hopefully counting on him to make plays with his legs. So it's just some philosophical things that they did that allowed those. And the biggest key is when you do that, it allows Smith and Waddle to get down the field routes. So outside of that, it we'll hopefully get to talk about that game again here about at the end of the season, but we'll see.
Coach, that just means offense can happen in a lot of different ways, right?
Right. And it looked like going into the game, our game plan was to throw the ball to set up the run. We threw 7 straight passes to start the game, and we had some success in the first half doing it. So naturally you try to do that more in the second half, and didn't work out for us. But, you know, you can always second guess everything, but everybody wants Georgia to run it more. But going into the season, everybody wanted Georgia to throw it more. So, you know, it's just a case of executing. And here, the thing that he pointed out, 20 targets for those two guys, 17 completions. I mean, we got to cover them better, even though they threw well. You know, we got all guys going to be drafted in the first round, just like they are going to be. And both of them got beaten, no 50-50 balls for us. We didn't knock any down at all, or got called for interference or defensive holding 4 times in the game. And that was one of the things we talked about with, you know, how's the game going to be called. But the bottom line for me is Georgia's got to win. Special teams, which they did. They got a lot of hidden yardage in that game. return game was great. They got to play defense and to an ultimate and play field position. They didn't do that. And offense, you got to keep protect the ball, and they didn't do that. So the recipe for winning went down the drain.
And that bold prediction from you last week, Coach, was that there would be a punt return for a touchdown for either Georgia or Alabama, and that didn't happen, but you were sure darn close a couple of times because it was an explosive, I would say, attack, especially for Georgia in the return game.
Yeah, I thought that first one that Waddle took back, of course, they had a block in the back, but I was worried about us kicking the ball too far and them returning it, but we had almost a 50-yard net on every time we punted, which Brent can tell you is hard to believe. And they didn't have it about 36-yard net. So we had our chances, but, you know, you got to make some way out Willie predictions to be on this show.
Well, and mine was that Tank Bigsby would lead the SEC in rushing. And, you know, any way you cut it, I think he's playing like one of the best running backs in the SEC, but also college football right now. And I'll be frank, I was lazy. I didn't go look to see if I was right. I was just going to assume after my 0-3 on the other picks.
He wasn't. He didn't. It was Najee Harris.
Yeah, that's what I had thought.
Najee got a lot of garbage yards, too. I mean,
very much so.
We played the counter well. We did everything the first 2.5 quarters, but he got like 75 yards in the last 20 minutes of the game, which they're you got to give them credit. They walked it down the field and kept it on us. You know, something that's really impressive, though, two backs that are just tearing it up in the league, the Harris kid and Doc can tell us where he's from in Georgia, and then Tank Bigsby from Georgia, two backs that Harris kid for South Carolina and Bigsby just eating it up as young backs in the league. That just goes to show you there's so many good players. But we made a real big push for Evans and also Milton. It looks like Milton's going to really be a good back too.
Brent, I thought you were going to jump in with something.
I was going to say, Coach is 100% right with Harris's yards, by the way. When Alabama had a 34-24 lead, once they went up 10, at that point, they had called 37 pass plays and only 21 runs. So when you look at the game from a sort of balance standpoint, it looks balanced at the end. But when you're up 10, they had 16 more pass plays than they had called runs. So all the running for them was at the end.
Get the lead with the receivers, hammer it down at the end with Najee Harris. I mean, that's such a good formula, and not many teams can do that. I would say Clemson is probably in that range with their quarterback and receivers and running back. And other than Clemson and Alabama, I guess we'll have to see. A lot of teams will have to develop into that. Brent, I guess I got to brag on you again for your bold prediction. You said that Felipe Franks would outplay Matt Corral. And, Coach, you've watched more football than me, but I think that happened. I think when you throw six interceptions, you get outplayed.
Yeah, you got to really give a lot of credit to the way these Arkansas defense is playing, and their offense is really doing a good job too. And Corral just went from penthouse to the outhouse in that game, no question about it. And I noticed that Coach Kiffin tweeted out that the guy that owns the record for that is unfortunately has passed away, his father-in-law, John Reeves, threw 9 picks 1 year for Florida. I remember when he was playing quarterback for Florida and he had Carlos Alvarez as a receiver. And Coach Doug Dickey had his team lay down against Miami, so Miami would score a touchdown so John Reeves and Alvarez could break the record. And they ended up breaking it. I think he threw 77 passes that day.
Wow. Hey, Brent, I wanted to – did you see Sam Pittman's quote after the game with about turnovers and Matt Corral? Because I asked him, it's like, did you – expect to get that many turnovers off this team?
And I didn't. I did see their football, the Arkansas football official Twitter account do the hog life thing. I did see that was really nice when they're talking about the defensive player, but I did not see the quote.
Yeah, he said, well, I really was expecting and hoping to get 7, but I guess I'll take 6.
Yeah, the other thing he said was they asked him if they knew who that defensive linebacker or whoever it was intercepted 3 passes, if they knew who he was. And he said, well, I know they know who he is 3 times.
Man, I love Sam Pittman. I love how much he loves that job and how much he's embracing Arkansas. It's fun to watch.
Very much so.
Is off this week, but we will Definitely be chatting about them more in the future, because the job that he's just done there so far has been tremendous. Like I said, it is a little bit of a lighter week on the schedule for the SEC. Our marquee game of the week, and this is a little bit based on the point spread, is the closest among the four games. We've got the Auburn Tigers at Ole Miss. We were just talking about Matt Corral and Ole Miss. Brent, Auburn, it needs some kind of hope right now, because if they don't find something with their team, you could just see this going south really quickly.
I mean, they're such an interesting case, because you look at the talent, and their talent is there in a lot of different spots, but the line of scrimmage weaknesses are coming sort of profound, being more profound each week. But they just have no rhythm. They have no rhythm. They have no confidence. You watch Bo Nix. I mean, he's actually one of the lower, I think, 10th out of 14 in the SEC in terms of being pressured. And if you take away the Georgia game, he's only been pressured on about 22% of his dropbacks. So it's not like he's getting massive amounts of pressure, but he's only had one game where he's completed over 60% of his passes. He's only had one game, the opener, where he had a passing grade over 70. So there's just struggles galore. You could see it on the sideline. I know Coach might have some interesting takes on that, because you could just see the frustration starting to fester amongst their team. And really, Auburn could be, he'd very easily be 0-4 right now, based upon how Kentucky played them in the first game and then the whole backwards pass thing against Arkansas. But, you know, they need a win in the absolute worst way.
Yeah, the one thing about Auburn that looks to me like is, like when we used to play in the backyard and you guys did, we used to say, center to me and I'll ad-lib it from there. I mean, that was the play, you know what I mean? It looked like a lot of ad-libs there. And I keep saying it should be, you got a countdown today. I see a countdown to when the debate starts tonight. I think there's a countdown to when Gus Malzahn takes this offense back over, because this experiment with what right or wrong is just not working with Coach Martz. And I'm sure there's a lot of pressure on him to deliver, and it's not all him, but they just don't, as you mentioned, they don't have any rhythm. But at the same time, they're going against a defense that really struggles to stop anything. So are we supposed to make our picks now, or what are we supposed to
do? I mean, if you want to allude to it, you're welcome to, but we'll come back at the end and make the picks.
But I just think the other thing is, there's going to be a lot of thought, or when they're going to put Plumlee in there, is he going to come in when you're having those kind of mistakes? But they certainly got some extra good players there, the tight end, the running back. I mean, they got so many good players on offense that, can Auburn hold up against them. But, one thing that Coach Steele does, he does scheme them. And looking back at the game, we were watching that before our game started. I don't know why Auburn went for two there. I mean, why did they do that? I mean, they're up 9-0, could be 10-0, but they went for two. I couldn't figure it out.
It was definitely concerning and interesting when you look at that decision specifically, but also if there's ever a week to get right, like you said, Coach, this is the week to get right. Ole Miss defense has just struggled mightily. And now you have, you mentioned Tank Bigsby earlier, Tank Bigsby now second highest graded overall running back in the conference. He's the fourth highest, has the fourth highest rushing grade in the FBS as a true freshman. He's 10th in the FBS in terms of forcing missed tackles. By the way, number two on that list is another from Georgia freshman running back. That would be Jahmyr Gibbs at Georgia Tech. Tank is giving them all he can give offensively. And if there's a week to get right and maybe get that rhythm. And what's interesting, even more interesting about this Auburn offense is you look at the receiving core. Stove is a senior. Seth Williams is a junior who's sort of a highly touted junior. Schwartz is a junior who also, runs a, legit, 4.3 40, has that track speed. And those three could be gone.
Eli Stove, yeah, he's a senior. Fine, whatever. I promise you he's been there for 14 years. I don't know how. I don't know what they're doing at Auburn, but I have seen Eli Stove in an Auburn uniform my entire adult life. I promise you I have.
Yeah, you make some good points there, Doc. I think one thing that I would do is they got that other back coming back this week, too, that was supposed to be their number one guy. What's his name? Shivers.
Shivers.
And So they'll be able to alternate those guys in there. But it definitely is a marquee game for Auburn because they still got some tough games left. All of us do, but, I mean, they're reeling right now.
With Auburn's offensive line, I think that they really have to have a committed effort to get Bo Nix out of the pocket, get Bo Nix moving where he tends to be a little bit more comfortable, or, and this is not an and, I guess it can be an and rather than an or, they got to get the ball out of his hands quicker because negative plays are happening when he holds it for too long and is trying to make stuff happen by himself. And a lot of that is because Auburn's offensive line has been such a struggle this season. And South Carolina's got some guys up front. It's not as good as it was. I said South Carolina. That's who they lost to last week. Ole Miss does not have guys up front. They have no guys up front. If this is a game to get your team back on track, it's against that Ole Miss defense. So we'll pick that one here in a little bit. Let's go over to the CBS game of the week. And, yeah, we're not even going to pick this game later because I think we all know who we would pick. But Alabama, after that physical game against Georgia, goes on the road to Tennessee. Jeremy Pruitt, apparently, if you believe reports, fired his defensive line coach in the middle of a game last week leading up to what's going on now. Brent, does Tennessee have any chance to pull off some Houdini trick here?
No. Absolutely not. But I will say it's how early and to me, this is the most fascinating thing about this game is how early do you see Harrison Bailey and just the general vibe of their team because of you have this, you know, recruiting momentum, you have this sort of expectations now and you're kind of falling flat of those expectations. And now you got Bama coming to town. I think Coach should speak to sort of how do you handle that situation when you have especially a fifth year, you know, senior at quarterback who's just struggling and your team just the vibe and the momentum of your team just doesn't seem right. How do you go about handling that situation? Try to right the ship, especially when you got Bama to come into town.
Yeah. I think the one thing with Garantano is he really got him through that 8-game stretch. He played really well where they won all those games. And now he's had the turnovers, 2 picks for touchdowns. So practice this week's going to really tell the tale. You can't just expect Bailey to come in and start the game and against a team like this. You know, he's got some issues too. I mean, there's a lot of good things he does, but he's not the most mobile guy either. So I think you're going to – but one thing we'll say, and we give Alabama a lot of credit for their team and everything, their defense is not a championship caliber defense at this point. Maybe it'll develop and get better, but boy, there was a lot of missed opportunities by every team that's played against them this year. I mean, you never see team like Alabama where guys are running wide open throughout the game and missed assignments and guys, it just doesn't look like an Alabama defense to me. Fortunately, their offense is all world and their kicking game's pretty good, but they're not going to go against that many great offenses the rest of the year either. They've already played A&M and Florida. Florida doesn't play them. So I don't know. Who you think can challenge them offensively, Missouri or who's going to be?
I mean, I think LSU might
be. LSU's about it.
Missouri's already played them.
LSU's about it.
Yeah.
And what was interesting, I don't know if you heard this, and Coach, maybe you did hear this during the broadcast, but they were talking about the Tennessee-Kentucky game. They were talking about they had a scrimmage the previous Sunday and they played all their young guys in a scrimmage and they were like, hey, Bailey's kind of showing out. Maybe he's ready to play. But that's a sort of COVID casualty in a way is that you haven't had as much opportunities to see a lot of young guys play. You've had to just get ready to go play games. So it's interesting to see how Tennessee now handles its quarterback situation moving forward because you had guys like Trey Smith come back. You had a lot of sort of positive momentum. And if you eventually just go with the true freshman, you're kind of in a way white flagging it, but also saying, hey, this is the best guy for our team.
Well, and that's kind of what I wanted to ask you, Coach, because when you play 3 quarterbacks in a game, that means one of 2 things. Either it is a massive blowout and you're just getting reps for guys and that's fine, or a coach is just searching for answers and trying to figure out who can lead that offense. What are the ramifications or what happens to a team when there's just so much instability at a quarterback position like we're seeing in Tennessee?
Well, in the case of Tennessee, you know, they got high expectations this year. You know, everybody's thinking they're going to be challenging. We talked about it. Whoever wins that game is third in the East, at least third, maybe second, depending on the Florida game and how things work out. But now all of a sudden they're reeling. They still got to play Bama. They still got to play some tough teams. I think they play A&M too, don't they? I'm not sure, but and Auburn. I know they play Auburn. So they got to establish some kind of credibility at quarterback, no question.
Yeah, Tennessee's schedule from here out is Alabama, Arkansas, Texas A&M, Auburn, Vanderbilt, and ending with Florida. So it is not an easy road for the Vols to be finding some identity. I just, to be honest with you, Brent, with the offensive line talent that Tennessee has, I didn't expect the offense to be, I don't want to say as rough as it is, but as inconsistent as it is. You just don't see that often with talented offensive lines.
Yeah, and it's the name of the game in football in 2020. And it's really been for football for almost as long as we can know. How good is your quarterback? Is your guy really good or is he not? And if he turns the ball over, you're going to be in trouble.
Well, I was laughing at Tennessee. You had the two pick sixes, and then you had an interception right after that. I think it was three interceptions in a matter of 4 minutes or something like that.
Yeah, they brought in JT Stroud, right, for one play. So what's sort of a funny, not necessarily funny, but a number aside. So his passing grade, JT Stroud, so 0-for-1, one pick. Corral's passing grade was just slightly above his. So got there one passing through one pick, but Corral played that bad that his was just slightly above Stroud. So, you know, when you throw six picks.
College football, literally last week, we're talking about Matt Corral being one of the best quarterbacks in the country based on his performance against Alabama, a defense which coach has established, not championship level at this point, but just the fact that he could do what he wanted against Alabama. And then the narrative the next week is like, oh, man, Ole Miss has quarterback issues. That's college football.
Yes, very much so.
Pro football, too. We saw Rodgers throw two picks. Everybody's on his case. I mean, it happens. I mean, that's just when you handle the ball that many times. We used to talk about when you play against a wishbone team or having coached a wishbone, you know that that quarterback's going to handle the ball 70 times during the game, and you got to make sure that he makes three or four bad plays out of those 70, because every day he practices riding the fullback, going down the line, pitching off the end. It's money in the bank for him, but you got to give him some different looks, make him take a quick pitch, make him think he can pull the ball, but he can't. And the same thing with a quarterback. You got to, you know, like I used to tell a guy when he's trying to get in the parking lot and the guy wouldn't let him in, you show him a $50 bill, but actually give him a $5. And when you go in there, he lets you come in. But no, I wouldn't do that. Show him the 15, take the 50.
Next game on the slate, Kentucky, that just had that game against Tennessee. Big win for Mark Stoops and the Wildcats. Seemed to be getting the season kind of back on track after an 0-2 start. Going to Missouri, a game at 4 o'clock Eastern time, 3 o'clock local time in Columbia, Missouri. Could be a little interesting matchup here, guys. Coach, it seems like Missouri may have found some answers at quarterback a little bit in their previous game. But honestly, these are two teams, I think, that are still pretty well unknown.
Yeah, I give Stoops a lot of credit for righting the ship there. I mean, because there's a lot of high expectations for that team, even though we knew they lost their quarterback, but they knew Wilson was coming back. They had both sides of the line coming back, offense and defense. And, you know, without question, we talked about it both weeks. They should have won both games they lost. I mean, you missed an extra point. They were ahead 28-7 in the third quarter against the team they missed the extra point the week before. They went up and down the field on Auburn. So you got that team back in focus here. And I think right now they're very confident going into this game against and it helps them really, because if they win that, they'll be on a 3-game winning streak when they play Georgia. So I think they certainly got the edge here. Talent, coaching staff that's been together is cohesive, and they know how to win. I mean, Missouri is still trying to establish that fact that with the new coach and everything, new quarterback. So they did win one game, but I think Kentucky's got a big edge here.
And Brent, in preseason, we talked about Kentucky's offensive line, but it's really been the Wildcats' defense the last couple of weeks that have gotten them back on track. What are you seeing from Mark Stoops' bunch?
Specifically in the secondary. You know, they thought they coming into the season and least based upon PFF grades, they had a strong secondary. And they just, in the first two games, that was where they didn't play as well as they thought they would. And if you look at the last two games they've played, their team coverage grade, 88.1 against Mississippi State, and then 91.1 last week against Tennessee. They were, you know, having pick sixes all over the place. But you're also seeing for them the reemergence of Boogie Watson along the defensive line. Over the past 2 weeks, he's got 10 quarterback pressures, a couple sacks. You know, he's four stops and, you know, negative plays in the running game. Him becoming that presence on the edge has helped them even more so in the coverage game as much as anything. But, you know, when you look at this game, this is probably one of the best games of the weekend, because you got actually two teams who are feeling really good about themselves. Missouri coming off a victory. Hey, we have our quarterback now. We feel good about Connor Bazelak. And you're getting back some receivers that you should be getting back some receivers that missed the LSU game. You're coming off a bye week, so you've had that extra time to prepare. So I actually look forward to this, watching this game just as much as anything.
Yeah, you know, when I look at it, how offense and defense feed off of each other. And so what I mean by that is Kentucky's defense playing the way it has its last two games has allowed Kentucky's offense to maintain its identity a little bit more. Terry Wilson's not going to be able to throw the ball downfield multiple times per game, not only to protect it, but that's just not what he's going to do as an accurate passer. He doesn't have that skill set. So then Kentucky's offense can lean on the run a little bit more, run that clock some, and that's what Mark Stoops does. That's his coaching philosophy there. So if that's a defense-first team with a mobile quarterback that can get some of those easy yards, it seems like a recipe for some pretty tough matchups, Coach, for opponents if that works out.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they've done. They won 9 games with that last year without even hardly throwing the ball. So, like I said on the preliminary, when I was talking a minute ago, this team knows how to get into position to win and have won, but they've lost some close ones too. I mean, they've lost some fourth quarter games that over the last 2 or 3 years that they'd like to have back. But I would say without question that they're on a collision course with Florida to establish who the second best team in the East is.
It definitely does look that way. Unless a team like South Carolina, coming off of a big win for Mike Bobo and Will Muschamp, I guess I should reverse the order since Muschamp is the head coach. But, you know, I think it's the offense at South Carolina that's been needing to develop the identity. And now at South Carolina against LSU, it looks like Miles Brennan not playing in that game. So LSU going to a true freshman quarterback. And it sounds like it might be Max Johnson from what I've been reading. We will see. So that's local to where we do this show. He was in Oconee County last year. So, Brent, quarterback questions for LSU, but still I think the questions are along the defense because LSU has not stopped anybody this year.
Yeah, I bet Bo Pelini spent a lot of time at the facility over the past few weeks because they got a lot of work to do. And what's interesting is that there's talent galore on that side of the ball, but they just obviously haven't been playing well. So hopefully for them, that 2 weeks has been a good thing.
Probably have the best defensive player in the country in Stingley.
You know, it's interesting. You know, he talent wise and what he did like a year ago. Yes. But he just doesn't look right. He looks almost lackadaisical in a way this year thus far. It's very interesting to sort of see him play. And that's, you know, the vibe of the team and sort of motivation, I think in general is like a big theme of what's going on with this conference only type schedule. So it's interesting to see how they come now out off of a 2 week break where they just got beat. You know, how's that motivation? And do they sort of try to, you know, get some positive momentum to right the ship? But South Carolina, you know, we talked when we did the first show, who is going to be a playmaker for them? Who are they going to have on offense? And they found 3 of them with Kevin Harris and Fenwick at running back. Both of them over 5 yards of carry now. Both of them look like actual players. And then Shai Smith, the receiver, has just been a monster for them, catching, I think, 34 or 50 targets. He's, you know, right around 350 yards receiving. And just watching him play just leads that team offensively with the energy that he provides and the physicality even at the receiver position that he provides. So, you know, it's one of the things we talked about in the preseason. Mike Bobo can coach offensive football, and he's finding ways to get them to succeed and really – got that moving in the right direction.
Yeah, the other
Coach Mike Bobo playmakers is dangerous.
The other thing that's going to help him is he got that kid that transferred in that went to, I think, Wingate or someplace, and he's been up in the air. They just great receiver. I think his name's Brooks or something like that, is going to be eligible now. And that's going to give him another guy to take a little pressure off their wide receiver core. And from what I understand, he just lit it up in spring practice. So, and fall camp.
Yeah, that's Jalen Brooks.
That's another guy that's going to help Bobo attack this LSU defense. You know, one of the things you get when we have an off week, which Georgia is off this week, and instead of me studying Kentucky like I would, or, you know, whoever your next opponent, but the old coach here sitting around, you have the chance to look at some of these other teams. And if you put the tape on for LSU and didn't know who LSU was the last three or four games, you would say to yourself, man, that is a terrible defensive football team. I cannot believe how many guys are AWOL on running around, you know, open, missed tackles, alignment mistakes. A team that just previously won the national championship, you could put that in a bubble and, in a one of those time machines and put it, say, here's a team that won a national championship. What about this team the next year? Who is this team? And you'd say, well, some 1AA team or something. I mean, don't you think that, Brent, watching them? I mean,
it's unreal watching their defense over the first few weeks. And just in terms of the scheme part of it, I mean, I don't want to get all nerdy here, but it's very much a really type, when you look at it and how they're doing. So maybe there's been a lot of self-evaluation as much as opponent evaluation over these 2 weeks for them defensively. But, you know, what's interesting as much about this game as anything is that now, like Dane said, you're going to have a true freshman quarterback, whichever one plays, whether it's Max Johnson or the other one. I can't
TJ Finley. His name.
Yeah, Finley. But now you're going against a defense that has an absolute shutdown corner, because J.C. Horn, what he did to Seth Williams last week was just not fair. Only allowed one of nine completions, had two picks, five pass breakups, completely shut down Seth Williams in the passing game. So you know they're probably going to do that this week with Terrace Marshall. So for me, with a true freshman quarterback, now granted they are at home, so that helps, but the bold prediction part is going to lean towards their true freshman teammate. I think when you have great DBs that South Carolina has, the tight end becomes your best friend, and I think that's where I'm heading with the bold prediction this week.
Yeah, I just think when you see – Max Johnson, though, I mean, he's grown up as a quarterback. He's been with his dad training him and everything. He's actually an older guy that's for a freshman. I mean, he's close to 20 years old now. And I just think this other guy is going to have to be really good if he starts ahead of Max. I feel a lot more comfortable with Max starting than I do Harrison Bailey watching him. And not because I know that, but watching him and listening to people like Dilfer and people like that. I mean, Max Johnson's a premier quarterback.
I'm not going to ask this question of coach, but I'm going to ask this to you, Brent. Which happens first? Gus Malzahn takes over play calling for Auburn, essentially giving Chad Morris an intern position, or maybe even the boot. I don't know. Does that happen first, or does Bo Pelini get the boot in LSU?
That's a really good question. And I would say Gus takes over first before Bo gets fired.
I really don't know who they would give the defense to. And Bo Pelini's a heck of a coach. I mean, he has a lot better resume in college football than Coach Morris does. I mean, certainly Morris did some good things at Clemson, but nothing like Bo Pelini's done. He's won a national championship in 1AA too. And always, you know, when he was at LSU on defense – and they were rolling there before. But I think moving to the 4-3, they just haven't played the techniques right or something. I don't know what the deal is, but you might can see them going back to the 3-4. Who knows?
And I mainly say that because of the disgruntled fan bases. If you look at who's mad in the SEC, it's Auburn and LSU fans. Auburn feels like they're in a tailspin with Gus Malzahn and they don't know what to do. And LSU, I mean, fresh off a national championship, how much can you complain? Well,
point I would make there is Malzahn has run the offense. He does that. That's his MO. Coach Ogeron's a D-line coach. He's been more of a head CEO, CFO. He's not a guy that's really called the defense before. So maybe, but I don't think it's any in the LSU deal to do that at this point. But you brought up an interesting question.
I bring up a lot of interesting questions, Coach. I'm going to brag on myself.
Right, you're good. You're good at that.
The next interesting question is, who you got? And it's time for our picks. We do three of these each week. Like I said, Brent holds a one-game lead over me. He's 9-3. I'm 8-4. And Coach, you're 7-5. So here are our chances at redemption. Let's stay there. South Carolina or LSU? Brent Rollins.
Man, there's a lot of me that wants to pick the experienced quarterback over the true freshman starting his first game, whoever it is. But I'm still going to go with LSU at home. I still think they somehow find a way to get a victory at home. And my bold prediction for the week stays in this game. I think Eric Gilbert gets 8-plus receptions, 100-plus yards, and a touchdown at least.
You said 8 and plus 100. Okay. Plus 100. Yeah, I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going with LSU, Coach. The game is in Baton Rouge. I should make sure that you're aware of that. Who you got, Coach?
I'm going with LSU, too. I mean, I just feel like they got too many good players not to play better than that, and they've had some time to rectify it. I feel like South Carolina certainly got a good team, but, you know, realistically, they beat Vanderbilt and a really bad Auburn team at this point. So, I don't know. And, of course, LSU beat Vanderbilt, too, so and lost to Mississippi State and Missouri. So I'm just going to go with LSU mainly because I think they got enough receivers to attack South Carolina pretty good.
I'll say just as a state of the program game, I think this is a big opportunity for South Carolina. Prime time, ESPN, 7 o'clock, a little bit of a lighter week on some schedules. If Will Muschamp and leaning on that Mike Bobo offense to score on Bo Pelini's defense, I'm just saying, this is one of those games, if you can find a way to win in Baton Rouge, it really helps you feel better about where their program is going in South Carolina. Let's go to the other Columbia, that is Missouri hosting Kentucky. My bold prediction comes from this game. I've got Kentucky holding Missouri to less than 20 points. And I know it's going to be difficult with Connor Bazelak playing some pretty solid football for the Missouri Tigers. I'm taking Kentucky. That's been the bugaboo in all of our picks this year. Coach, what are you doing, Kentucky or Missouri?
Yeah, I don't think you're going out on a limb there. I mean, I think Kentucky's really got – if they'll just go in and take care of business and take care of the ball, I think they can win this game decisively.
Brent?
No, same. I think Kentucky's just the more physical team here and sort of win based upon that physicality.
None of us are going to be picking Tennessee to beat Alabama, so we're not going to pick that game. Our marquee game of the week is Auburn at Ole Miss, a noon kickoff Eastern time, so that means 11 o'clock Central. That's when crazy stuff happens. And you got Lane Kiffin, and you got Auburn. I think this is going to be the most fun game of the weekend just because I think all hell could break loose. And I don't know what I'm going to be watching. I think it'll be football, but I'm not sure. Brent, Ole Miss, Auburn.
Ole Miss, going with the better offense.
Coach?
I'm going to go with Auburn just because I got to try to catch up. And I think they're about 12 months pregnant to do something right on offense. So I'm going with Auburn.
While you're going with the better offense as a whole, Brent, I'm not convinced that the better quarterback as a whole is there. And now maybe that's an even battle, but I think Bo Nix has enough experience in tight games, unless he and Chad just really are fussing, and it seemed like they were not on the same page in South Carolina. I'm going to go Bo Nix. I'm going to go with Auburn. And this is – y'all talked about Kentucky the first 2 weeks. If Auburn lets me down again, I'm done with them. I can't do that anymore if they do this to me.
Hey, this game is going to at least be exciting, probably. There's going to be a lot of just interesting football in this game.
Coach, do you have any bold predictions for us or anything that you want to put down on paper about these four games on the slate?
Yeah, I think we're going to see the two freshman quarterbacks show you a lot this week. One, Bryce Young, I think you'll get a chance against Tennessee to show you what kind of ability he's got. And then certainly Max Johnson at quarterback for LSU if the Brennan can't go.
I think LSU is going to be a really interesting team. Look, this is about to be the midway point of the SEC schedule. So we're going to wrap up this show here. But guys, I think it's been interesting so far to see where the league is going. It looks top heavy with Alabama and Georgia and Florida, kind of like we thought, but who knows? The teams can still emerge at this point and surprise people. Brent, any final thoughts?
I think we said about last week about A&M. I mean, they're in sort of driver's seat. Now, they still got a lot of really tough games, but in terms of from a scheduling standpoint, they are in a good spot. And they've turned the team over to the running backs. And I think that was –
the thing I would point out is all of a sudden Mon's not having to do everything. I mean, they got a good enough running game now with their tight end and their receivers that they can do a lot of RPOs, and it's not just incumbent on him to have an unbelievable game every week. It's kind of what I talked about, the wishbone quarterback. Take the ball out of his hand where he has doesn't have to be everything Kellen Mond. And their defense showed, you know, just like everybody against Mississippi State, a lot of three-man rush, but enough pressures where it kept them off balance. He came with different kind of looks, and their defense is evolving now and building some confidence. They've already played the two toughest teams on their schedule in Florida and Alabama. I mean, they're looking down – the schedule that they have at this point is better than anybody in the SECs except Bama, because Bama's probably better than them. But I think their schedule looks like a 9-1 schedule to me.
Seems like a good final word there, and maybe a prediction that we can chat on next week. This has been Around the League from UGASports.com. For Jim Donnan, for Brent Rollins, I am Dane Young. Thank you for listening. Make sure that you're subscribed to our YouTube channel or wherever you're listening to this podcast. We will see you next week.